The Passion of the Christ or Meet the Fockers?
Meet the Fockers.
Meet the Fockers, yeah.
Welcome to Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell.
I mean, who wants to have sex with a guy named Bob?
Oh, Bob. Just doesn't sound right. Oh, Bob.
Bob.
Oh, Bob.
Oh, Bob.
Bob.
Oh,
Bob. Bob. Bob.
With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-R-T.
And Josh Adams.
That's Jaime. Protege of mine. Rank number 32 in the federal prison system.
32?
That's right.
Out of what, 20?
Visit us at ihatecritics.net, everyonesacriticpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, the group and the page. Our Twitter and Instagram handle is CriticsPod. That's where our top fives are, trailers, news, reviews, and all interactions. Please give us a like or follow on all those sites. And then head over to Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the show and rate and review the show. We'll rate a review on the air. If you write one, it helps us move up the charts. But you can also listen to us on Spotify, Google Play, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. And then there's Patreon, ihatecritics.net/Patreon. We do have new merch. I didn't reach out to anybody this week about addresses, but I will get on that. It's crazy. Usually what happens is I buy it, then it sits, and then I get the boxes, and then it sits a little more, and then eventually I tape it together. Then after all that, I'll finally go to the post office. So this time next year, you should have your stuff.
And then we'll change the name again.
Right.
If you want an able-bodied podcast co-host to help you out, you know.
You want to reach out to people, go for it. I just, it's not that I don't want to, I just forget.
I am happy to reach out to these wonderful individuals that support our show. I do nothing except come here and spout out crap out of this pie hole, and you do all of this background.
I have no complaints with anybody's what they bring to the show. I will not be that person. I don't even think it. I promise. But no, if
selfless leader.
If you feel like reaching out to get some addresses, I have a couple notes because someone did reach out, but I'll let you know about that later.
Okay.
News and trailers. We'll start with Rocket Man.
Rocket Man. This is Taron Egerton playing Elton John. Not a bad choice because they do know each other from the Kingsman movies. That Elton's been in both of those. And what you come away with from this trailer? It's only a teaser, so it's only like 60 seconds. But that's certainly not Elton singing. I don't know if that's Taron Egerton necessarily. I assume it is, but. It's not great.
No.
It's not great. And moreover, the thing that really strikes me is that this is really the wrong time for this movie. With a Freddie Mercury movie coming out that looks pretty damn amazing this November, this is not a time for this movie.
Are they coming out at the same time?
I have no idea when Rocket Man's coming out. I hope they've got some time away from this from Freddie Mercury's movie, because Bohemian Rhapsody looks amazing.
Yeah, Bohemian Rhapsody is this fall/winter or whatnot. And at the beginning of that teaser, it said next summer or this summer. So Since we're out of summer, I imagine it is next
one. So it's about
one.
The Ray to Johnny Cash movie difference.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. I know both were well-loved, but Ravings made me kind of dislike the Johnny Cash one a little bit because I liked Ray. I mean, I don't know. It's almost like the Marvel thing. All right, I'm biopicked out. Well, and it's getting to the point where it's now I recognize these people and I know them, and so it's almost awkward. I don't want to rush through their story. I mean, even though I like Straight Outta Compton, it still felt rushed. You know, they covered a lot of time in that, and they're going to probably do it with the Queen one, and so, but. I don't know.
The biggest problem we're going to have here is that the star is still alive. Now, granted, Elton happens to be a lot more open than most people, but I have a feeling that we're in for more Stephen Hawking-esque hagiography.
It said based on a fantasy, too, so I have a feeling it's going to be a little goofy on top of that, which may be a good thing. It might set itself apart from other biopics, but we'll see.
Yeah. I like Elton John a lot, but I really don't like Taron Egerton, so I'm going to try really hard to bury that deep down and like just enjoy this.
I like Elton John a lot, too. I like Freddie Mercury a lot more.
So. I like Elton John outside of the 80s. Don't listen to the 80s. The 80s that's never happened.
Oh, I don't know, man. That's kind of where I got the Elton. Well, wow. Yeah, if I say that I got all my interest from 80s music, then that doesn't really lend me to much.
But it's not wrong if that's where you started and then went back.
Stay in the 70s.
It is where I started, and I had to discover the 70s later.
I mean, that's how it was with Billy Joel. Start with the 80s songs, and then I realized I like the 70s ones better. Now, Queen, I did like. Was The Show Must Go On? That was 80s, wasn't it?
Everything.
What are you looking at me for? I don't know.
Everything maybe. Queen did was amazing.
That's true.
The shittiest Queen song is better than most things out there.
Yeah, that's very true. All right, Creed 2.
I'm still not on board completely. I don't know. There's something about this that just isn't hitting me right. I think it's just I just don't trust this director. And that's the main thing that's holding me back. I just don't trust this director.
It's hard to get as excited as Creed, but at the same time, nothing about this trailer makes me feel any different about it than that first one. If nothing else, a little more viable this time because they don't just flash Drago there like we're all supposed to remember it. But it has the potential to be like, if not as good as the first one, at least like worthy of the name Rocky or worthy of the name Creed, so to speak. It could be a Rocky 2 as opposed to a Rocky 5.
You say worthy of the name Rocky, but there's a big level of good and bad in that series.
I feel like I think it's too early in Creed's career to be going to Drago already. Like maybe we needed one more movie to really prove this franchise. And then you could go make your goofy movie.
Well, unless he dies at the end of the movie, then you know we aren't going to have any more Creed movies.
We've been saying about Rocky for the past 5 Rocky movies or whatever. Yeah. Are they going to kill him off finally? Nope. They killed Adrian off. They killed
Apollo. He's going to die exactly like Mickey.
What would be cool is like if he fights Drago at the very beginning and the rest of the movie is just him dealing with losing or something like that. But Stallone's not going to do that. And no studio is going to finance that either.
I did notice a training montage as part of this trailer, which was really sweet. I enjoy the training montages.
Yeah, I mean, my level of excitement, it's a different excitement. It's more of a, okay, this is a goofy one, okay. Maybe it's too early, maybe it's not, but regardless, you don't do Creed versus Drago unless you're kind of just trying to have fun. But at the same time, Stallone doesn't really know the difference. Sometimes you think he's like Rambo, what should have been fun, and he just went out full-blown, made a...
That's the thing. Does he know that Rocky IV isn't a great movie?
Like right.
He's not aware that Rocky IV is watched somewhat ironically.
I wouldn't call it ironically, but I know what you're saying. But it's definitely it's all action, no story.
Yeah. I was thinking about this while watching this trailer, though. It's Michael B. Jordan. Every time I see him in something or every time I know that he's involved in a project, I'm really interested in it. He's just, there's something behind his eyes that it's kind of like how I felt about, and I'm way past the point of being, you know, newsworthy here, but like how I felt about Dane DeHaan when I first started on this show. And I was like, there's something behind his eyes. That worked very poorly for me, but that's what I'm saying. I'm not ahead of the curve here at all. He's clearly an established, well-known actor. Everyone knows who the hell Michael B. Jordan is, okay? But I kind of feel like he's becoming my favorite actor to watch. I mean, if it wasn't for Jake Gyllenhaal or other people that we've talked about as the best actors working today, there's just something about him that I really gravitate towards. His Black Panther performance, that's by far the best villain in the Marvel movies thus far.
Oh, and Fahrenheit 451, he was fantastic in.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, that movie was terrible.
I didn't see it.
That movie wasn't any good.
He
yeah.
wasn't the problem. It was just a terrible idea.
He's never the
time.
Problem in his bad movies, really. Like Fantastic Four, he's not the problem with Fantastic Four. He's rarely the problem in the bad movies that he's in, but he does make some bad choices. Fantastic Four was a bad choice. Fahrenheit was a bad choice. Kid is a terrible choice.
Spoiler!
And he produced that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I got my niece who's like a, you know, she's seven now. She, every time she goes over, she wants to watch, she says Rocky, but she means Rocky IV. But she, so literally like four times in a row, she said that. And I'm like, fine, we'll watch Rocky. And I made her watch Rocky I. And she wants so desperately to, like, you know, get my approval. And I'm telling, this is the best one ever. And for a seven-year-old, it's not.
Right.
So she's pretending to like it, and I can just tell she's miserable. It's like, just wait. She's like, and he lost? I'm like, sorry.
It's a life lesson there for you, kid.
If you ever wonder why he loves Rocky, it's because Rocky loses.
In his favorite movie, the hero loses.
Yep. No, he does not lose in that movie. He loses the fight, but he wins Adrian.
He loses the fight, but he wins it life.
He won his,
right.
He won his heart.
And that's the kind of shit I would say, man.
And he was supposed to go down in the first round, and he made it to the end.
Good for you. He's grindy.
Yeah. He's Ryan
He's
Terrio.
Like a white middle infielder. Exactly. Way to go. Way to stick in the majors for a decade. He's a loogie.
Except for he would have been like Ryan Terrio at 30, just getting into the majors. Right.
Wow.
It's like that. Was it The Rookie?
Yeah. Jim Miller.
Anyway. Podcast, we got to start at some point. Night School.
Night School with Kevin Hart, Tiffany Haddish, and a you know, kind of an all-star team of comic help with Rob Riggle and Marilyn Ryscombe and Al Madrigal. You know, it's a pretty solid supporting cast, and Taron Killam as well is the kind of the villainous character. Kevin Hart plays this typical, you know, kind of short man syndrome guy who's constantly, you know, yelling and screaming and getting himself into trouble. He's a successful barbecue salesman who dropped out of high school before he graduated because he knew he wasn't going to. And when his barbecue place goes up in smoke, he has to go back to high school in order to get another job and get his GED. So he's got to go get his GED at night school. Tiffany Haddish is the teacher. There's no romance there, that she's not interested in him at all, which is nice. He's already got a girlfriend, so, and that's kind of a subplot that he's hiding this fact that he's lost his job and is trying to get through night school, is trying to hide that from her. So obviously she starts to think that he's cheating on her. You know, typical. That's the thing that Malcolm Lee does, is that he makes these movies that you can predict, but then he allows his actors the space to do something fun with it. And that's kind of what he did with Girls Trip. That's what he did with the Barbershop movies. Just let these really talented people do something fun with a very predictable plot. And this is extraordinarily predictable. You know what is going to happen in this movie. It's not a spoiler at all here. You know where this is going. The key here is just allowing these actors to have a little bit of room to do something funny, and they do. I mean, that I still laugh at that scene from the trailer. Even in the movie, I was still laughing at the scene from the trailer where he's working at the chicken place that's right next to the strip club, and if he stands in the right spot, he can smell both cocoa butter and chicken.
Two of the world's greatest smells.
I laughed again, even after the trailer, that I laughed after the end of the movie. So not all the best jokes are in the trailer either, which is a rare surprise for a movie like this. This is not terrible. It's not great. I mean, it's far from Malcolm Lee's best work, but you know, it's a typically Kevin Hart comedy where he just kind of does what he does, plays Kevin Hart and has some fun doing it.
How does she do?
She's good, yeah. She's much more limited than you think she's going to be. She's not the main character. She's kind of, it was as if like they were halfway through making this movie, and then she became a star, and they're like, uh-oh. Beef up her part, quick. People know who she is now. But she's good. You know, Tiffany Haddish has got a very strong comic persona.
Yeah. That's. I mean, they seem like a good team on the talk shows that they do. Been fantastic.
And if I had known or looked up that it was Malcolm Lee directing it, I own three of his movies. That must mean that he's speaking to me in some way, shape, or form. So I'll see this when it hits video.
Smallfoot.
Yes, this is an animated musical about yetis living in a a mountain. They've hidden themselves away, and they've come up with a bunch of lies in order to keep everybody in line and let them pretend that there are no human beings in existence. So it's just Yetis, and they live on a mountain that flies above the clouds, and there's no bottom. You can't go below the clouds. And Common is the guy who kind of came up with all these rules, and he's got them on this vest that he wears, and he just pulls them out and shows you to, like, Smallfoots don't exist. But I found one. No, they don't exist. And that's the key, is that he does find one. Channing Tatum's character, Mego, finds a Smallfoot, and he tries to bring him back to the village, but he gets, you know, comically misplaced, and he's gonna go down. He tries to go and find another one, and he does. It's James Corden, and he brings him back to the village, and he starts to upset the rules of the land. This movie shouldn't be any good, but it's not bad. It's not terrible at all. In fact, I enjoyed this movie. The music is solid. Zendaya has got a beautiful voice, and the voice cast is really tremendous. They're having a lot of fun doing this. You can hear just how much fun they're having in their voices. And for once, James Corden, I didn't hate him, so that's, you know, a big plus. It's been a while since I haven't hated him, so nicely done. Channing Tatum's really great. He can sing. He can really belt it when he wants to. Danny DeVito's really funny in this movie. And so is LeBron James. LeBron James has got a lot of charisma in his voice. It took me a little while to recognize him, but once I did, I was like, man, he's really great.
he's never going to be as good as Jordan was as an actor, though.
Right.
If you listen to idiots talking about basketball these days.
Just wait till Space Jam 2.
Right.
It won't be as good.
The bar is so low.
Yes, but Jordan's won 6 championships and LeBron's only got 4, so you see.
There are a number of things in this room that I could hit my head on repeatedly to achieve the kind of pain I want to dull out.
I recommend Smallfoot. I think people should see it. I think parents won't despise having it played in their house for the kids, and it's inoffensive, funny, and cute.
No, that's the surprise review of the week, honestly, because every time there's a what I assume to be a throwaway animated film and you've got to see it, and I feel bad for you. But in this particular case, it's such a relief.
It's a low bar, too. I had a pretty low bar for this one.
Sounds like a kid's version of, like, Invention of Lying or something like that, that Ricky Gervais movie.
They put a lot of work in it. And, you know, Common's character isn't a villain either. Like, they give him a very solid reason for why he does what he does, and they give him a big song about it, too, which is a really good song.
Slice.
Yes, this is A24. It's on demand now on Amazon. And this is a truly wonderfully bizarre film. The idea here is a town that's cut in half. Ghosts live on one side of town and humans live on the other side of town. There is this sort of human ghost detente. They kind of given them half the town so they won't haunt everybody every day. Chris Parnell is the mayor who came up with this plan. The peace between humans and ghosts is about to be upended because there's now a series of murders that are taking place of pizza delivery people who go into the ghost part of town and end up getting murdered. And the people want to blame the ghosts. The mayor is telling them not to blame the ghosts. And then they come to settle on kind of blaming this werewolf, this 1,000-year-old werewolf played by Chance the Rapper. There is so much wonderful mythology to this movie. I was so, like, just, I could not figure out what it was that I was enjoying about this movie, but I was consistently amused from beginning to end. I laughed much more than I expected to, because this movie has, it's just this own bizarre, weird little kind of vibe that it's on that you have to get on yourself, and if you can't get on it, you're going to hate this movie. if somebody tells me they hate this movie, I completely understand, but I really got on the vibe of this. I loved these ghosts. These ghosts are just people that look like they got bad zombie makeup on. There's a scene, like, one of the biggest laughs in the movie for me, there's a ghost who just turns around and walks out a door. He doesn't go through it like a ghost. He just opens the door and walks out and kind of bangs into it. I loved that. I really loved that. This movie got me. This movie just entertained me. Zazie Beetz is in this, and from Atlanta, and Paul Scheer from The League is in this. Chance the Rapper is just, he's a guy. I mean, he just seems so delighted to be in a movie. And he just seems very happy to be playing a werewolf. And I loved how I could not, you cannot pin what time this movie is set in. Is it because there's the internet, but there's no cell phones? The cops are from the 40s. The newspaper girl's from like the Cary Grant movie. Like she's just plucky and investigative. And I adore this movie. I really do. And there's kind of a 70s vibe to it as well. And then there's a little bit of Ed Wood in there. I really love Slice. I think it's fantastic.
I rode that line the entire time between, I think I like this a lot, and I hate this because it makes no sense at all. Everything that you're saying is right, though. It has its own mythology. It has its own cadence. If you follow the rules of this movie, though, you're going to stay with it. And I did all the way through. It's only an hour and 22 minutes long. So even if you're semi-bored by it, you could probably stick with it for an hour and 22 minutes, if nothing else. It's just a matter-of-fact way that they say certain things, like, yeah, but he's a werewolf. What? And I mean, it got a couple of nice guffaws and smiles out of me or whatever, but it's weird. Like, no doubt A24 looked at this and said, ah, unique, fresh. We can bring that to our table, even if somebody hates it, because at least it's unique. And I'll give them that. There's something goofy about the film stock, too. It almost looks a little bit like a cheap TV movie at certain times. And that works with the film very well. And there's some really gross moments, too. And people are slicing necks open, you know, and they're just staring at them. And what is this weekend about all of the neck slicing going on? Like, we'll talk about some more neck slicing in a bit, but I don't know if I would recommend it to somebody, but I think only certain people I would say, this would fit right in your wheelhouse because they're already weird and messed up. So, like, I'm right on the fence with this one. Hard to recommend.
If I may, just before you start, Bob, you hit on something there that's kind of interesting with the way the look of the movie. It kind of reminded me of something you'd like accidentally stumble over on Cartoon Network in the middle of the night. Like, this is the kind of movie that they would make.
Yes, especially with Paul Scheer showing up in the film.
Yeah, I'm kind of two minds. I had a hard time getting on the vibe, but I didn't dislike it. But at the same time, like you were saying, it's very fresh and original, and I've been all about that lately. I want more of that. And A24 did a great job picking this one. I just had a hard time getting on the vibe, and I knew I had to, and I don't know what it was that kept me away. But, you know, now talking about it and hearing you guys repeat things and just say, but he's a werewolf, or, you know, or just you saying he's a werewolf, it makes it funnier to talk. Kind of similar to the fishing with Gandhi thing, where as we were talking about it, I feel like Josh and I started to like it a little more. I don't think Sean came anywhere, but it's something, you know, it's short, easy to get through, but it's definitely weird. But when you start saying some of these things out loud, it does get, you know, my opinion of it's growing constantly as we're talking about it, if that makes sense.
The pacifist werewolf. Like, what? And how? All of the people that you could get to be in the film, right? Let's get Chance the Rapper. Let's have him do one of his first film roles just because. He seems like a very charismatic dude.
The director of this movie is a guy who's directed a couple of Chance's music videos. Oh. So I'm imagining they thought of this on the set of one of those videos, because that's kind of reminiscent to Chance the Rapper's kind of weird vibe of his music. So this movie definitely fits him. I loved just the stupid little thing, like I mentioned about the ghost, or the way that they have to say the entire name of this stupid pizza place
every time,
which is, I can't even remember it now. It's like, but it's a hello, it's perfect pizza or something like.
Ready, it's perfect pizza base.
Yeah.
What?
They got to say the whole thing every time. Or the way Chance the Rapper has a line late in the movie. He goes, all I want to do is deliver quality Chinese food at a good price.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, I don't want to call it so stupid it's dumb, because it's all intentional, you know. Everything they're doing was with a purpose and it meant something, but I don't know, it's just it's its own thing. I mean, if I had to choose between this and Mandy, I think I'm going Mandy, but...
Agreed.
I do see why someone would choose this, but again, I see why someone hates it too. But, you know, I didn't hate it. I was just kind of, I couldn't get on the, I just knew I wasn't in the right zone when you're watching the movie. And it was kind of frustrating me because I had other things. It was my 20-year high school reunion this weekend. So I just, my head was in other spots and I was trying. I was trying hard. Hellfest.
This one's garbage. no surprise there. This is a very typical teenage slasher movie. This girl goes back to where she lives to be with her best friend and this other girl that she doesn't like, and they're going to go meet boys at Hellfest because one of the boys has got them, you know, VIP passes to this traveling horror show, which has a reputation because several years or 3 years earlier, somebody had gone to Hellfest and was murdered there by some guy and was hung up in one of the horror rooms, and everybody thought she was a prop until she started to smell really bad. So she was there for a few days before anybody found her. Which, you know, that idea isn't bad. Like a serial killer who kills people at Hellfest and makes their bodies into props. Like, that could be an interesting premise for a slasher movie. But they don't even bother to use it. They use it one time, twice maybe in the movie, and then they're done with it. That has nothing to do with the movie. And it's like, what are you doing? What, you just pissed away? The only good thing about this movie is that premise. They just piss it away so they can do the thing where she just constantly just painting themselves into a corner. Where, well, why didn't he just kill her right there? He's standing right there. Right, he's standing right next to her. Why didn't he just stab her? He can just reach over and stab her right now. No, he's got to wait for her to walk into the bathroom and then go in the stall and then stand outside the stall all creepy like and then still not kill her and then have to be run off by somebody because he's a freaking idiot. This killer, they paint themselves into like several corners like that, where the killer has the main girl he's been following the entire movie, and he just walks away from her so he can go kill somebody else at random. Like, that's just really, really awful. It's poorly directed, it doesn't look good, the kills aren't exciting or interesting. This is just a typical slasher movie, and it's got jump scares, and it's just an idiot film.
Yeah, I didn't go see it.
Nope.
I don't think anybody did. Did it even make the top 10?
I don't know. That's a good question. It's not in the top 5 for sure. It's not in the top 3.
Yeah.
4 or 5, I got number 6.
Yeah, that's way too high.
The Nun beat it. The Nun made $110 million?
Yeah.
Jesus. Guess we're getting another one of those.
More than likely, yeah.
Simple Favors at 43. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, that's good to see. I love that movie.
All right.
Box office is way more interesting than Hellfest, so.
Yeah, Black Klansman, 47.8 on a $15 million budget.
Cool.
Man. All right. Anyway, back to the show.
What's your top five? Who's your top five?
Originally, I think it was like top 5 movie depictions of hell, and then Sean just like anything hell related.
Yeah. I wanted to open it up because this is a really bad bunch of movies. So
there's not very many depictions of hell that I've seen. Jason from New Mexico had The Night I'll Possess Your Corpse, 4 Hell Comes to Frogtown, 3 The Black Hole, 2 Merrily We Go to Hell, 1 Cabin in the Woods. Ian Britt has 5 Little Nicky, 4 All Dogs Go to Heaven, 3 Hellraiser, 2 Constantine, 1 Spawn. Uncle Jeff says, I can only think of 2, Deconstructing Harry and the Looney Bugs Bunny movie. I guess I'm more of a heaven guy, which I thought was funny. I put Event Horizon. It may not be great, but it's still a creative use of hell. It was. Although Josh would call it, how did he word a hereditary standard? Or I don't remember the exact wording.
No one agrees with me.
Oh, I know. That's why I brought it back up. 4, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. 3, What Dreams May Come. 2, South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. And while technically they didn't go to hell in Hereditary, they might as well have. Josh?
Yeah, talking about this subject, another film came into my head, and it's going to kick What Dreams May Come out of the five spot, and that's Barton Fink. That's such a freaking delicious film, especially the way that it ends. And then you think to yourself, wow, that allegory of writers really putting themselves in hell just to create something. Oh, that's interesting. Number four is From Hell, definitely backed up by this week's viewing. Three, South Park, Big and Longer and Uncut. Two, Prince of Darkness, the John Carpenter film. I just really have a soft spot for that one, as cheesy and dumb as it is. It takes itself seriously, at least throughout the film. And number one is The Exorcist. Like, yeah, they don't go to hell, but there's demons.
Similar type
and
thing, yeah.
I mean, at some point, you know, Reagan does mention things about what someone's mother is doing in hell, so.
And I guess Drag Me to Hell, you had that as your honorable mention.
I did, and it's a Sam Raimi film, and I'm sorry.
Well, no, it's a great movie. You get a brief glimpse of hell in there, I guess. But
The ending to Drag Me to Hell is really what does it for the entire movie for me, because I did not see that coming. And I mean, I kind of did like a small little step back in the seat that I was in because it was that effective. Like, oh, they really ended it like that. Yes. That immediately elevated it past forgettable.
I just got to shout out Constantine. That movie is insanely watchable. For not being a great movie, it is really watchable. And a terrific depiction of hell in that movie, I thought. Then From Hell, obviously, is going to be on my list, because I picked that movie this week, and I absolutely love From Hell. But I want to also mention a movie that not a lot of people talk about, Silent Hill, which is its own unique vision of hell. Jacob's Ladder as well. And then South Park has obviously the best hell ever.
Yeah, I couldn't remember Jacob's Ladder. I remember, I've seen it, but I don't really remember it. And
yeah, it's like Vietnam vets dealing with post-traumatic stress, I think. And I think the director is Adrian Lyne. Am I right about that one?
I don't remember the director. It probably could be, but yeah.
Can't believe I forgot Barton Fink. Bugs me.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized Undisputed
Classic.
Our Undisputed Classic is From Hell.
Yes, From Hell, the Jack the Ripper story with Johnny Depp as the Inspector Aberline. And this is the Hughes brothers, and I've liked a lot of what the Hughes brothers have done, but this is the only one. I think this is the only masterpiece that they've ever made, and I think this is a masterpiece. One of the things that happens to me in my job is that I see so many movies, and I see movies about serial killers a lot, and one of the things that you got to do for me is make it, you know, unique. And this movie has just such the most amazing production design. It's very much a style movie. There's so much style in this, in every aspect of it, every performance. There's just this little hint of just that little extra bit of style to it, that little extra something about it. I really adore that Johnny Depp is playing his own, you know, kind of unique vibe. It's a kind of the opposite character of what he did in Sleepy Hollow. Aberline's much, you know, Aberline's as smart as that character, but he's got a little toughness to back it up. Then you've got a terrific set of women as the prostitutes, who are all of these very unique and colorful characters. Ian Holm is amazing. That ending is extraordinary. They go right at it. Just right at that ending. And I really loved the way Ian Holm is portrayed in those final scenes. I thought that was epic to me. That was the only way they could really bring this movie to an end. This is a terrific movie. I think it's incredibly underrated. The style especially is just so extraordinary.
I'm with you. This is a movie that I owned at one point, and the reason that I got rid of it is because I could never imagine enjoying the viewing of it. You know, there's a lot of gore in this movie, the slicing of prostitutes, the discussion of what Jack the Ripper has done to his victims is really intense. And it makes for a very effective viewing, But at the same time, I couldn't imagine repeat viewings. And what I remember the most about this film is how the cinematography and production design was. And for whatever reason, I'd watched it on DVD before. I rented this one, video on demand, HD, and it has such an artificial sheen to it. And I know that I'm on a 1080p TV and everything, and it should be just fine, but there is something lost in the high-definition transfer of this film that I wish I had back, because sometimes the grain you want there, and I remember that in From Hell, and I really enjoyed that. The Hughes brothers, to me, design-wise, they're right up there with any other director. And I remember, I think they did Menace to Society, if yeah. I'm not mistaken, and that is another masterpiece to me. I consider that to be above ones that are lesser known, such as Boys in the Hood. They're in the same genre about difficulties in the inner city. But this particular one, Johnny Depp sometimes annoys me because he has a little tick to a lot of his characters that in this particular case, he's kind of playing about as straight as you could imagine compared to a lot of his other characters. It's actually scary at some points too. If you think about somebody that, yes, they're a killer, but there's something supernatural to it. And the whole idea that an entire legion of people would come together and cover something up like that just to keep the good name of royalty intact. I believe it. 100% believe it. And the idea of these secret societies cropping up or whatever, only the smallest little detail here. My son has been going the past couple of weeks to this organization that aligns themselves with the Shriners and the Freemasons and everything like that. I'm like, really? This week I got to watch a movie about the fucking Freemasons and all of their connections and how they've covered stuff up and how creepy it is. But when Ian Holm's eyes turn the shade that they turn in this movie, that's the part where I started to sell this one as, oh, it's way better than just something I'm going to forget when I'm done with it. There's it just elevates it to something really creepy is going on in here. And that line, of course, that's famous, that Jack the Ripper says, that it gives birth to the 20th century. It's just something that you say is something creepy, right? But once he injects his performance into that, it gives that phrase life, and then you're actually legitimately scared of him. So this is a very effective movie. I just don't know if I would recommend watching it over and over again. You get a little depressed about the world.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm feeling like I missed something, because I like it. I think it's good, but, I mean, throwing the word masterpiece around, I don't know that I'd even throw the word classic around, but I like the movie, so I don't know. I feel like I'm... either you guys are overrating it or I'm missing something, but I don't, everything's good. It's a solid movie. I think people should see it. I don't know what makes it.
I think the part where, I started out with my review about how it looks in the production design of it and putting the Hughes brothers on a particular level of filmmaking, their stories don't always match what their style is. That's for sure. And for me, the way that it's a masterpiece is the way that it looks and the authenticity, at least based on their lighting and everything like that, of how they made London from that time period come alive. I mean, the city itself and all of its streets and its dark corners or whatnot, they're characters in this film, just like all of the other actors are. So to me, that's the masterpiece part. Like, just looking at this one for a solid couple hours is totally worth your time.
And then on top of that, though, you know, this is based on a graphic novel, and it does have a feel and a look like a graphic novel as well. As much as it has that authenticity to it, it also has that comic book sheen to it in a way that I was really vibing on that. I really enjoyed that. And the look of the film is incredible. And the characters are colorful, and it's an extraordinary story. It's an extremely well-told story. The dialogue is even very authentic and real and chilling. I mean, like, the lines that Ian Holm has in this movie are genuinely spine-tingling. And this movie is fantastic in that way. And the detail in those scenes where they're talking about those bodies, it is I mean, it dwarfs Seven sometimes with just the absolute utter depiction of depravity and death.
Yeah, and watching Anne get trapped in the way that she is and held down and lobotomized right there on screen, it's not like we see her afterwards. They're going to show us the entire process, and you feel so awful for her. She never got the chance to say goodbye to her child. She never got the chance to get an explanation as to why this was happening to her. She's completely terrified and has no idea why. That's a hell of a scene right there.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with any of that. And I went and read, just because I knew something like this was going to happen, where I'm like, and I, you know, I agree with everything you're saying, but that in Ebert's review, he kind of had, similar to what I'm saying, he had good review, but it was still kind of a 3-star movie.
Mm-hmm.
He said that what they did was, I guess the directors had said that this, they really made a movie about the ghetto here, which they brought that to London, which I thought I found neat, and that's definitely true. And very, it's just very cool. I guess my, I hate saying it's not memorable because it is, but it's, you know, you say Seven, I'll never forget. Maybe it came out because when I saw it and how old I was, mm-hmm. but I'll remember Seven over this seven or eight times more. I mean, it's, I think that's more what it is for me, is the memorable factor. And I don't know if it will hold up over, you know, it's, and I'd seen it before. This is my second time seeing it. But again, I don't disagree with anything you guys are saying. I don't put it on that level.
Of all of the Alan Moore graphic novel adaptations, Watchmen included, and you guys know how much I like Watchmen. This one is definitely the best of them. It's not exactly a group of fantastically well-known films, but I'm curious, considering it's the best of them to me, the notoriously cantankerous Alan Moore, what he would have said about this one.
I was actually going to ask you guys, I'm pretty sure he hates it.
Because he hates everything.
Well, I doubt he saw it. I think he hates that it exists.
Yeah.
Because it's made for the graphic novel. Leave it there. And
yeah,
I can respect that. Good for him. Although I actually kind of think Watchmen, the movie, is better than the book, but that's just me.
Oh, I'm with you on that one.
I think the twist, the way he changed it at the end, was made more sense.
Absolutely.
Fuck all you guys are going to write letters now.
Trust me, no one that loves Alan Moore listens to our show. They're going for much more higher brow crap.
I'm mostly ambivalent on Watchmen, mostly because I don't care about the graphic novel at all, and the movie was eh.
Well, yeah, I literally read it like the week before and then went, so it was all fresh in the moment. I definitely probably would have been with you if I didn't have any. If you're not bringing the graphic novel to this movie, I don't think you're going to like Watchmen that much, now that I think about it. All right, 1988.
Number 18 in 1988. Squeezed and pulled and hurt my neck in 1988.
Squeezed and pulled and hurt your neck in 1988.
Oh, boy. There's 9 films in 1988, and so it's going to be impossible to talk about all of them at length, okay? But just to...
We're only at 40 minutes. We're good.
Oh, excellent.
Take your time, yeah.
I love it when you give me the floor. But to pigtail a little bit...
in the other room.
A little
Elvira,
bit
let's go.
Off of the hell idea, Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, turned 30 this weekend, and...
Which one
I
is
mean,
this?
This is the one where Donald Pleasance comes back, and he, Michael Myers, even though he's an invalid, according to the synopsis, he awakens and returns to Haddonfield to kill his 7-year-old niece on Halloween. Can Dr. Loomis stop? Who cares?
Well, the funny thing is, I think they did a 5th one and maybe a 6th, but they had this new little storyline that they liked with Michael Myers, or the fans like. I never got into this round of the Halloween movies, but they just abandoned the story to bring Jamie Lee Curtis back and do like H2O or whatever it was.
right. And then Halloween never, Resurrection.
And they never finished the storyline, and people were really pissed off about it.
Of course.
Oh, right, because the next one is when they bring in the other doctor in the back story of who Michael Myers
something
was.
Like that.
And he's like a defender of this evil, like, well, like Masons.
Now, I used to listen to a horror podcast, and they were like, they got me so interested that I went back and watched these movies. I'm like, what are you guys fucking talking about?
Well, when it comes to the next Halloween movie, Halloween 5, the one with Paul Rudd, you got to watch the correct version of it. Because if you watch the theatrical version, that's just, it's just utter shit. If you watch the non-theatrical version, it's not terrible. It's almost watchable.
Paul Rudd, huh?
But it's it's hard to watch Paul Rudd, though, in this movie without, like,
well, not
it's
this
like
movie.
Watching Anna Faris in a movie. And no matter how straight she is, you just know her from the Scary Movie movies. Right. Or Leslie Nielsen. You're going to laugh when she talks.
Yeah.
And it's not. And Paul Rudd's not as bad, but in a movie like Halloween, it's kind of funny.
So Leslie Nielsen couldn't have played Dr. Loomis, is what you're saying.
I would have liked to see. Yeah. Maybe in like Halloween.
He was a serious actor, but definitely much better at the spoof. In Halloween themed movies, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. Now, I remember Elvira very well from the 80s.
Boobs.
Yes. My K-Bird dad was a fan of Elvira.
Boobs.
Right. But I never saw anything of, other than like her introducing something on some sort of late night television.
And you
or
saw
whatnot.
Her boobs.
I did, but I mean, I.
Most of them.
It took me until my 30s to be more. No, never mind.
It's all there is about this movie. The only reason she ever had a career, she put her boobs just right up there in your face.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Like a true artist does.
Morticia Adams, but with cleavage. More cleavage.
Basically.
Yeah. Okay. Also this week, Heartbreak Hotel. The only reason this is of significance to me is because it involves kidnapping Elvis, and it's a Chris Columbus-directed film. Fans of his work, Home Alone, Harry Potter, first couple films or whatever, might gravitate towards his work and have already known Heartbreak Hotel. I considered watching it as a result. I know the guy, but...
Weirdly, this is kind of like Elvis... They kind of like took the same premise and made that Star Wars fans movie where the fans go to
fanboys.
Yeah, this is the same idea here. They kidnap Elvis in this movie to take him back to their house so he can have sex with their dying mother.
Played by Tuesday Weld.
You didn't like fanboys?
That's the premise of this movie.
I hate fanboys. Man, that movie is really bad. Oh, well, I understand why you would like it, but, it's really bad.
I think I like that it's bad.
I like Seth Rogen in it.
You're right.
He's a great Star Trek fan.
I mean, just... I don't know, just the idea of a Star Wars fan getting a Jar Jar Binks tattoo on their back is funny to me. Before it comes out...
Misa have regrets!
And then now they're... Assaulting women, not assaulting, but harassing women online. The same people.
Of course. Fanboys remembers a more innocent time in Star Wars fandom.
That's when they didn't have widespread access to the internet.
Right. Well, right, but the guys doing it probably have Jar Jar Binks tattoos that they're trying to cover up.
It's true.
That they didn't meet, they got too early because they're stupid.
Also, one that I watched this week and have things to say about it is Punchline. This is a film until this week when I did the 1988 list and put it online. I had no idea it existed. I'd never heard of a Tom Hanks and Sally Field movie. Otherwise, I would have been all over it before this time. Because you just, like in my head, it's really cool to have an idea of an actor working with another actor that you really know, but you've never seen them work together or whatnot. But, of course, Forrest Gump.
I was going to say.
But, I mean, she's playing a caricature and he's playing a caricature and the movie sucks and, in their natural elements here. Well, Tom Hanks plays kind of a douche in this movie. He's a stand-up comic that is really trying hard to get a break because he's tired of doing this nightclub routine. And Sally Field is, this may be very familiar to those of you that are watching TV right now, a housewife that finds joy in doing stand-up, and she really wants to learn the tools of the trade, and she wants to learn through Tom Hanks. There's a bit of a misguided romance angle in this movie that doesn't really work, but I enjoy watching the comedic process. And this movie talks about that a little bit. And it's authentic in its way because you see that they're not exactly like killing it all the time. They have struggles and they try and work on their format and everything like that. And I'm a kind of guy, I could never be a stand-up comedian because I'm just too self-conscious about every single little thing. So I have such a respect for comedians and how they do their thing. This movie is right in the thick of that. It's not a great movie. And like I said, there's a weird subplot that doesn't need to be there at all. But for a change, you get to see Tom Hanks being a dick for a good portion of the movie. And Sally Field just as earnest as ever. I actually really like Punchline.
What a shame that 30 years later, the Sally Field character is now super racist on Twitter.
What now?
It's a Roseanne reference. Come on.
Oh.
She was a housewife and became a... Never mind.
Okay, so I'm...
He was thinking the Marvelous... He was thinking the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yes. Because I just happened to start watching that this week, too, and wow, what a convergence. No, you know?
I will say, if you hear actual comedians talk about Punchline, they really hate this movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's not remotely authentic is what they tend to say about it. And I really hate Punchline. I really find it just to be treacle. I can't stand it, honestly.
Awesome. Because I found myself enjoying it and then saying, this is really like the show that we just watched. And I probably had a jaded...
you were just remembering The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, Sally Field does not get naked on stage like in that show, which would have been much more interesting, I suppose.
But they also brought in real comedians to help organize the stand-up part of it too, where this was not that.
For sure. An animated film that I really, really badly wanted to see on Sunday, and by the time I remembered that it existed at the local theater on its 30th anniversary, I was 10 minutes from start time and at my house, so a half-hour drive, I was going to miss it. And that's My Neighbor Totoro. It's a Miyazaki animated film. The plot involves two girls moving to the country to be near their ailing mother, and they have adventures with the wondrous forest spirits who live nearby. Now, I've seen three Miyazaki films, Spirited Away, the Nausicaa one, and Princess Mononoke, and I haven't gotten into any of them. It's not that they're bad. It's just not only a style of animation, but a style of storytelling that it's just a little too random for me. But I understand that Miyazaki is possibly one of the greatest, if not the greatest animator that's ever lived. And he's still making stuff. Studio Ghibli or whatnot is very well renowned. And that's why Fathom Events is bringing back all of these films this year. And you can still catch them. But I did not see it this week. I can imagine that one of us has seen it.
I've seen it, yes. It's incredible. Like most of Miyazaki's work. Anytime you say that, you sound like such a douchebag. But nevertheless, I have enjoyed just about everything of his.
It's definitely true. You sound like a douchebag.
Fuck you. I gotta say, you gotta see The Wind Rises from 2013. That was incredible. That was the one I was just busy trying to look that up. But you know, Howl's Moving Castle and Spirited Away. Spirited Away was in my top 10 of the year it came out. Ponyo is amazing as well. I don't spend a lot of time, like, I'll never go back and watch any Miyazaki movies. Like, I don't have a desire to actually see them again. But when I see them, I'm always moved by them and deeply moved by them.
I did get to the theater for the Transformers animated film from 1986, though. I did remember that.
Wow.
And spend actual cash to see it, and it is not good. just so we're clear, nostalgia
you chose
glasses.
Wrong.
I chose the jewel studded grail as opposed to the carpenter's cup. Yeah, clearly.
Bob doesn't know that reference.
I do not. I have no idea what you're talking about. I just thought he made up words. I didn't know he was actually referencing anything.
He chose poorly. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Yeah, Grail Knight.
Got it now.
Okay, well, sorry. Nerds. Okay, there's a biopic about Charlie Parker this week. Clint Eastwood directed, Forrest Whitaker playing Charlie Parker. It's called Bird, and it's all about the life of that musician. Now, I know the name Charlie Parker. I know all the principals involved, and it is available to stream if you want to, but I didn't even know this movie existed until this week as well. Have you seen it?
You're going to want to go back and check this one out. Yeah. For your end of the year list. Honestly, it's that level.
Don't just watch Whiplash again.
Yeah. Forrest Whitaker. I mean, he does what he does. He's authentic, you know, that's his kind of his thing in his roles where he's playing a real person, generally speaking.
In Eastwood, if you know even a little about him, he's huge into jazz music, and so I can imagine that this would be a real passion project for him. And when he's dialed in, then he really makes good films. When he's more interested in pumping up patriotism, he makes the Paris movie, I guess.
You can sense... Oh, man, that movie sucks. You can sense, like, 88 is kind of... He's finally starting to get the hang of being a director. Like, he's done good work prior, but he's pretty average... director, and then he gets to this, and he's really like, this is the lead in to get to Unforgiven, where he's actually kind of mastering the form.
Two more from 88, believe it or not. One called Memories of Me stars Billy Crystal and Jo Beth Williams. On his girlfriend's insistence, a disgruntled man tries to make peace with his high spirited, street smart, and often irritatingly careless father. A failed actor who never quit his dream to be a success. Blah, 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 blah. I just remember this advertisement on HBO at some point and being not interested.
It's just so shrill and shouty.
When Billy Crystal is good, then you get something like When Harry Met Sally, whatnot. When he's shrill, you get this or Mr. Saturday Night, perhaps. And last but not least... I didn't see it as available. Maybe it is. It's called Things Change, and this is a David Mamet film. Last year, House of Cards turned 30, and I didn't get to watch that one. And this year, we've got Things Change, and it stars all of his typicals. In Joe Mantegna, Rebecca Pidgeon, I think, is in there, and Don Ameche is the lead of this one. It's the same typical plot synopsis that you would expect out of Mamet. It's going to have witty dialogue, I'm sure, in situations where characters have to talk themselves out of things. That sounds awesome, because most of the things that Mamet has done, I've really, really enjoyed.
Was this available? This is one of the rare Mamets I didn't see. So
when I spoke into the Fire Stick, it did not come up with this as an option. Huh. So either I spoke it wrong, everything else worked in terms of finding it, but no. Oh, there is one more.
I was going to say this is like High Fidelity prequel or something.
called Tapeheads, and Tapeheads isn't available. And this is John Cusack and Tim Robbins. I mean, for crying out loud, it does sound like a High Fidelity prequel, but there are a couple of creative losers that accidentally become big shots in the video music industry. I wasn't interested in the story so much as I like John Cusack a lot, and I could imagine this would be fun, but it's not available to watch on YouTube, on Hulu, on Amazon.
It's not funny. It's embarrassingly bad.
Things Changes on Amazon for $2.99.
Cool.
Thanks, Bob.
Your Fire Stick doesn't fire it.
Maybe search David Mamet, because Things Change is kind of a generic title, really.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's a good point.
I am on IMDb. Maybe the link doesn't work. Let's see. Don't buy it. Oh, now it's $3.99. Thank you.
Oh, you got to go to the other watching options to get your $2.99. Yeah, that's how they get you. Well, here I am thinking, oh yeah, I'll pay the extra dollar to watch From Hell in HD. That sounds great, dumbass.
But yeah, that's 88, all nine of them.
If in 10, if you really include the Transformers 86 movie, which I don't.
You went to see that?
Well,
twice.
The atmosphere. My parents paid for it the first And I use MoviePass. I was allowed to use MoviePass for this one, oddly enough, but I did have to pay for two tickets beyond that. And boy, those two couldn't have been any more bored. I am talking up Transformers to my kids, saying, of all of the Transformers films, this one's the best one, man. No.
It still is, actually. It still is the best one.
Well, okay, fair. At least it's daring a little bit and whatnot, but, oh, man, it sucks. Rose-colored glasses, like, sometimes it works. You know, watching He-Man cartoons now, I actually kind of love it. It's stupid as hell, but I love it. Transformers sucks.
Thanks for telling our patrons how you throw their money away.
Well, you were able to comment on Miyazaki. I don't know.
Miyazaki wasn't available on MoviePass.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Right. Next week, we've got four classics or whatever it is.
Sure.
No, the Star is Born. A Star is Born. The remake, a remake of a remake of a remake of a remake, is coming out with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, along with Venom. Our classic is Pick Your Star is Born, I guess.
Pretty much.
I might try to watch a couple of them just because it sounds like fun.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch. I already watched the 1937 William Wellman version, and I've got the 51 with Judy Garland, and the 79 with Barbara Streisand. And then, of course, the brand new one this weekend. I'm not watching Glitter, though. I know Glitter is also a Star is Born movie by a different name, but I'm never watching Glitter again.
Is that the Mariah Carey movie?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm watching Glitter.
You'll represent for Glitter. Okay. I plan on trying to at least watch the Judy Garland one. I heard a lot about that growing up, and
you really should try and watch the 37 version. Frederick March and Janet Gaynor. It's amazing.
Are these long movies? That's the only thing I wonder.
It's under 2 hours. Like an hour 51.
That means that it's on the... Honestly, when you're sitting there and you're watching a bunch of stuff and you look and you compare, like, boy, I could watch this 88 movie, or I could watch this one that's only an hour and a half long. Yeah, it does tip the scales a little.
There's A Star is Born in from 2010.
There is?
Oh, it's a foreign film.
No. That's about the time that Beyonce and Will Smith were going to make this movie. Yeah,
that didn't happen.
That almost happened. Will Smith and Beyonce.
Ooh, the old one is free on Prime.
Yeah.
Hour 51.
The Frederick March one.
37, yeah.
Oh, well, then there's no excuse.
1954 is also free on Prime. It's 2.5 hours.
Wow.
Oh.
What are they going to do? Wow, because that, I mean.
A Star is Born, A Star Lives, A Star Dies.
It's like Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead.
It's probably just got a lot of extended Judy Garland songs, I'm betting.
Star is Born 76 is 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Wow.
And then let's see what 2018 has.
Yeah, I'm curious now.
2:15.
Yeah.
So the second shortest.
Well, good. If you don't have a lot of time, then watch the 1937 version.
I've never seen any of them, so I'm curious. I don't, but at the same time, I'm worried about totally just getting so dull to the story. I'm not going to like the Bradley Cooper one.
The 37 version is about actors as opposed to singers. It doesn't become singers until the 54 version.
Hmm. Yeah, this does kind of remind me of our Beauty and the Beast week last year, where once I got to the new one, I'm like, I've watched three Beauty and the Beasts. I need some downtime after the show.
But this one, I mean, it looks so good.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what's supposedly the worst one? The Streisand one?
I mean, if...
Or that get good reviews, too.
I don't remember, honestly. Like, I'm not even sure if I've seen the Streisand version.
My mom was such a huge Streisand fan. That was the only one. I never saw it, but I didn't realize it was a remake till I was older. That's how... Like, I thought that was the only one existed. That's why I assumed it was the most popular one. I didn't even know Judy Garland made one.
The one that people talk about is the Judy Garland version, I think.
I just, in my life, the one that people only talked about was the Streisand version. But again, that was my mom more than anybody. And anytime you go to a thrift store, that's stupid records in all of them.
Yeah, it is. I've been doing a lot of thrift store record shopping over the past couple of years.
But that is, or the top five will be actors that are directors. So I want the whole, you know, not this one-off crap, which I think Bradley Cooper is a one-off at the moment, but if it's that good. But, you know, someone who acts a lot, you know, not like a Tarantino or something like that.
Oh, what, I can't choose Todd Field, then?
I don't know who that is.
Neither do I.
the director of In the Bedroom. He was also in Eyes Wide Shut.
That guy. No, I actually do know who you're talking about, but
might as well be Ben Mendelsohn.
He's better known than Ben Mendelsohn.
I don't know. I know who Ben Mendelsohn is now.
I was just taking a shot at Josh.
No, as soon as Todd Field's in both a Star Wars and a Marvel movie.
See, that's the problem, though. He's in a movie nobody knows. As always, I want to thank our Patreon supporters. Let's start with our key grip level in Charlie Messing. I'm in another. Our character actors, Josh and Christina.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Our special effect level, Corey.
May the Force be with you.
Our associate producer, Jason from New Mexico.
Everybody has to eat shaving cream once in a while.
And our movie stars, Dave Seavers and Uncle Jeff.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
If you want to be a Patreon supporter, head over to ihatecritics.net/Patreon. It's the best way to help support the podcast. What else am I forgetting? No, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, please go there, subscribe to the show, write and review the show. Like us on all the social media platforms. Critics Pod is our handle at Instagram and Twitter. I'll see you next week.
That ought to do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other. We're the best three friends that anybody could have. I mean the three best friends that anybody could have. That's right, the three best friends that anybody
could have. I was laughed at because I always ask you guys if you want to play Flickchart and you never say no. And the reason I ask is, like, early on there was like a handful of times we said no because we were busy or something was going on, and so now I just, and then a lot of times I'd cut that out. But do you want to play Flickchart? Not tonight.
On the fence.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, you know, I've been playing Flickchart like crazy during
work
times that I maybe shouldn't have. Well, because I've completely checked out of this job. I mean, I fucking hate it, man. So I'm just sitting there trying to occupy my brain with something other than misery, right? And so I'm like, oh, I forgot about Flickchart. So now I'm heavy intense into it, right? I've got like 7,000 rankings and I've seen enough movies now so that the Flickchart's like, what about this thing we've already asked you about, you know? And I'm up to 2,800 movies. And now I'm thinking to myself, boy, that seems really low. And that means I'm probably between, in my life, you know, 3,000 to 3,500 movies that I've actually seen that are at least an hour long. And I've included animated, like, home direct video DC films in this because it's an hour, hour and a half. But then I thought, how many movies would Sean see? And I've got to like multiply that by at least a five, right? An exponent of five.
You can say I'm 42 and I started to like really watching movies at 19, yeah.
Yeah. 10K easy. But I don't know how far are we on the show? Like how many rankings have we done and whatnot?
It says view all 861 movies on my Flickchart.
Wow.
It's not very many.
No. But they limit our choices so much. Like every week it seems we get stuck with one movie.
Sometimes we do that on purpose.
I was playing around with it though. And it's a lot of fun to do like by actor, by director, and by decade. You know, it's a lot of fun. I find that I've
when
seen
you
a
do
lot
by
of movies
actor,
in the past 20
is
years.
It still movies or is it actors?
it's their movies.
It's their movies. So, like, did George Clooney list in 34 of his movies?
So you're just fighting up against his own movies?
Yeah.
Interesting. The Usual Suspects or 101 Dalmatians, 1996.
No matter what, 100 Dalmatians. Yeah.
Did you pick 100 Dalmatians?
No matter which version of 101 Dalmatians, The Usual Suspects is better.
Gotcha. Pleasantville or Domestic Disturbance? It's kind of an oxymoron there.
I dislike both of these movies, but I easily dislike Domestic Disturbance a great deal more.
Interesting. Pleasantville, I wouldn't have imagined that you would have disliked. So, but I like Pleasantville a lot, actually.
Yeah, Domestic Disturbance sucks really bad.
Really bad.
Sister Act or Brokeback Mountain?
Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, I still haven't seen Sister Act, even though we had a nun week. So it's got to be Brokeback.
Hot Shots or The Usual Suspects?
Let's see. This is interesting.
If you could watch one right now, what would you watch?
I'd probably watch Hot Shots.
Me too.
I would go with The Usual Suspects because there's just as much comedy in that to me as Hot Shots. He'll flip you for real.
I don't know if there's just as much, but there's definitely comedy in it.
Yeah. Right. Huh. Oh, I can put you in Queens. Oh, really? I live in Queens. I'm like, that's magnificent.
Well, the funny thing about a lot of that was they were all annoyed with each other, and he just kept the camera rolling. Some of it was not even scripted. A lot of the Kevin Pollak stuff wasn't.
You are so fantastic at knowing the backstories of a lot of these films and whatnot. You read more, in other words.
Well, no, I listen to Kevin Pollak's podcast.
Oh.
Okay. He's got a segment on his show where he's got a quick questions, and it's like Coke, Pepsi, whatever. One of them's Keith David or David Keith.
For my money, Keith David.
I agree. How about you?
Sure, yeah.
You don't care. Goonies or The Omen, 2006.
Ugh, God, dude. Fishing with Gandhi.
I'll go with The Goonies.
Yeah. Bad Boys, 95. Bad Santa, 03.
Bad Boys.
Bad Boys.
I think I'd go Bad Santa. Silence of the Lambs, The Bourne Ultimatum.
Silence of the Lambs, just barely.
Silence for me.
Yeah, silence by a lot. Ooh, Planet Terror or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, 1990.
That's just mean. That is Fishing with Gandhi.
Planet Terror, I mean, the rose-colored glasses for TMNT doesn't necessarily work either. I mean, it's fine, but...
I'm with you.
They're both trash.
But it was trying to be trash, so because of that...
it achieves it.
Exactly. The Game, 97, or Love Actually?
Love Actually.
Love Actually.
I agree. Ocean's 13 or Love Actually?
Love Actually.
Love Actually.
Black God, White Devil. I've never seen that. Ghostbusters 2. Nobody's seen that one?
I don't know. I was thinking of a George Burns film, maybe, but that's Oh God, You Devil, not Black God, White Devil.
You might have to make that a classic for fun sometime. Has anybody seen Chocolate Strawberry Vanilla?
I can't.
The sequel to Black God, White Devil.
Maybe. True Grit, 2010. Ghostbusters 2.
True Grit.
True Grit.
Still haven't watched that after buying it. Life of Brian, Alien Resurrection.
Life of Brian.
Life of Brian.
Planet Terror, Arctic Flight, 1952.
Never heard of it.
Planet Terror, Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles.
Planet Terror.
What is wrong with you?
Blazing Saddles. It's a comedic preference. Mel Brooks doesn't get me as much as other comedy does.
I'm going Planet Terror. I don't know why you hate that movie so much. It's trying to be trash.
And it achieves it. Right. I can even smell how bad it is coming off the screen.
Lawrence of Arabia, Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl.
Lawrence of Arabia.
Agreed.
Even though I think it's overrated.
Saving your choice.
I have also noticed that even if you have like a very nice internet connection,
just a slow site,
Flickchart still runs slowly sometimes. And if you want to click undo after you've been doing it for a long time, it doesn't wanna. And then you have to remember which one that you actually had seen so you can plug it back in.
The X-Files or Nightmare on Elm Street?
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Well, it doesn't matter which X-Files film. I will still choose the X-Files.
Nightmare on Elm Street. Castaway, The Princess Bride.
Princess Bride.
Castaway.
Princess Bride. Gone in 60 Seconds, Cimarron, 1931.
Safe to skip that one, I think.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Agreed.
That was one thing while watching From Hell, though. I kept wondering, has Johnny Depp and Nicolas Cage ever made a movie together? That'd be kind of weird. I don't know why I was thinking that during From Hell of all movies. Because, like you said, it's the straightest movie he probably ever had.
Boy, that's a really good question.
I don't know that it would work. I don't know. Maybe it's that Tim Burton connection. Because he was almost in a Tim Burton Superman movie.
Yeah. Did Cage ever make it into a Tim Burton movie?
He got to play Superman once.
Teen Titans Go.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze, or Die Hard 2?
Die Hard 2.
Die Hard 2. And Flickchart's got something like going for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. I saw that like dozens of times. Not today, because I was studious at work today.
Face Off or The Birds?
The Birds.
The Birds.
Sure.
I did quote Nicolas Cage's line from that one just yesterday about the peach.
The wrong peach movie. <That's right. laughs>